A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Tennessee Volunteer Sports Guys, where I am still the aforementioned Chase. I'm coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Everything School HQ over there, fellow Tennessee Vol sports guy, Rocky Top Insider, Ryan Schumpert. Ryan, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're in the midst of the chaos of NCAA tournament, SEC baseball, and now a little bit of spring practice thrown in the mix. So busy as can be, but always better to be busy than have nothing going on. So excited to be back on the pod.
Absolutely. Are you going this week? Are you traveling for the game?
Yep, we'll head over very clutch. So they always have press conferences and open locker room and open practice the day before the first game. Very clutch. It's like 3:30, so it's mid-afternoon. We can just leave on Wednesday morning to drive over there instead of having, it would have been like a 10 o'clock practice or something. We would have had to drive over there Tuesday night, so excited about that.
Okay, there you go. Well, that'll be fun. We'll see how Tennessee ultimately unfolds. I think St. Peter's is a good draw, and we'll talk about that in a second, because look, St. Peter's, good story last year. The odds of back-to-back Peacock craziness in the NCAA tournament seems very unlikely against two blue bloods in Kentucky and Tennessee in back-to-back year. So my first thought was like, that's a good one.
Tennessee's a blue blood?
I think they're a blue blood. We're throwing Tennessee as a blue blood. If there's one thing I'm certain about, it's that every Tennessee and every North Carolina and Kentucky fan would agree that Tennessee is a blue blood. That's one of the things that you and I are certain of on this very program, is that the good folks over there in those different shades of blue would attest that we are a blue blood. We didn't paint the golden sphere blue again if we weren't a true blue blood. That was a signature. Like we're back as a blue blood in basketball, I think.
Yeah, I don't really like that move, by the way. No, I mean, I'm a green guy. I like green a lot. I thought the green looked better for the Sun Sphere than the blue. I'm not a hater. Blue's not bad, but I like the green better.
Well, wasn't it originally blue? Isn't that why they went back? Wasn't it blue for a year? Like, wasn't that the first coat?
It might have been. I don't know. I didn't do a whole lot of reading on it. More than one day, I was just driving across the Henley Street Bridge, and I go, the Sun Sphere blue now? And it was.
Shout out to them, though, getting it done quick, because I feel like that's a project that should take a while, and it doesn't. And then I'm like riding around and like the Smoky Stadium's like half done. You're like, OK, well, I guess that's happening next year. And you're just like, man, people move a lot quicker in terms of architecture than I ever would anticipate, because I'm always like, man, are they really gonna be? And then you drive by and you're like, oh, OK, well, I guess they just got that done in a very short amount of time. And that will conclude the architecture segment here on this edition of the podcast. Ryan Schumpert, just you and I tonight. No Jack Foster, no Ethan Stone this week. But hey, we still have a lot of Tennessee basketball and Tennessee football, which is what you really want to dive into, is Tennessee spring ball, all ball football all the time. yeah, this is what you're here for. No fall football yet, as we're still just at the very beginning with Tennessee spring practice getting started here. So a lot of time for us to talk fall football. Right now, it's all about basketball and baseball. Ryan, it's not 24 hours after because Tennessee last played on Friday night instead of Saturday night. We're recording this on a different day this week here on a Monday night. But 24 hours after, biggest takeaway you're still thinking about from the Vols loss to Mississippi State for the second time this season?
You know, I don't know if there's anything I'm necessarily still thinking about. It's been so far away or anything specifically. I think it's just like the what the hell did I just watch kind of nature of it. And Tennessee to lose their second straight game for really just the second time this season. I guess they lost three in a row going from Maui to Chapel Hill back in November. But the first time since then, they've lost two straight games. And when a week and a half ago, you would have said Tennessee's playing their best basketball this season, all of a sudden it feels like they're playing their worst basketball this season. And they played the worst they have all season in that Mississippi State game. So I think it's kind of, as I get further removed, whatever it is now, 72 hours away removed from that game, where I'm at, it's kind of like, the SEC tournament, at the end of the day, what happens in the SEC tournament isn't the end of the world. And there's tons of examples of that, and Tennessee's seen it up close and personal in the last 2 years. They win the SEC tournament 2 years ago in Tampa. They get bounced in the second round. They were playing great. Last year, they limped in the tournament with Kai Ziegler tearing his ACL. They make a run to the Sweet 16, I think, deeper than anybody expected that team to. So I guess as we get further removed from, again, one of Tennessee's worst performances, probably Tennessee's worst single worst performance of the season, what I'm thinking about is how do you balance those two things of the loss in a macro sense not being the end of the world, but, man, how they played was really worrisome when you're heading into the NCAA tournament.
And yet, them and Houston are the only two teams in the tournament right now that have zero losses to non-tournament teams this year. Tennessee, every loss that they have now that the tournament is set was against a team that ended up qualifying for the NCAA tournament, which is a good spot to be in. Like, you don't want to lose two straight going into the big dance. But Kentucky, I mean, we talked about Kentucky a few weeks ago where it's just, if Kentucky was the second game of that four-game slate, I think you're looking at the end of this past season a little bit differently. Like, if you end it with Bama and Auburn wins at the end of that cycle, then you're like, oh, we're feeling pretty good. And then you also look at what ended up happening in the SEC tournament anyway, which was the top three seeds all went down, and Kentucky goes right down right after you. You save your legs. You get to kind of recalibrate a little bit. You saw Auburn won the tournament and it did not help them, and they were very upset after winning the tournament that it didn't help their seeding. So I think now that we saw how everything played out, and we saw this 2 years ago when Tennessee didn't gain anything from winning the SEC tournament in and of itself 2 years ago, I think this is all fine. I'm just not raising the panic meter in terms of these last two losses, and Kentucky's playing really good basketball. You got hit by an unreal shooting night that's going to be hard to replicate night over night. And then this one, I mean, you played your worst. Guess what? They're not going to play that bad again in their opening game. I mean, there are near 20-point favorites against St. Peter's that we'll get to in a second. But, like, I don't know. I look at this. The only thing that I think, if you're a Tennessee fan, you're frustrated about is there was an opening because North Carolina ended up falling too in the ACC championship game. And that it would have mattered if you had not gone, if you had not played the way you did against Mississippi State and been able to make it through the weekend, is you would have had an opportunity to solidify yourself as a one seed and overtake North Carolina if you were able to run the gauntlet, because we saw that North Carolina ended up losing to NC State in an upset in the final. I guess that's it. And then, I mean, as we've talked about, it's just the history between success for number one seeds in the tournament versus number two seeds is gigantic. You wouldn't think it's huge, but it's huge in terms of winning a title, this, that, and the other. But we'll see what ultimately happens. Tennessee's been a two seed before, multiple Sweet 16s here. I think they made it to, what, Elite Eight once during that time as well as a two seed, or no?
Not as a two seed. I think they were six seed the year they made it to the Elite Eight.
Okay. Either way, I think we'll get in. Like, right now, it's not even, like, let's not even forecast what, like, Final Four, whatever. I think the plan right now, if you're a Tennessee fan, is like, let's just get it, make sure we get out of opening weekend. Like, let's just make sure we get to the Sweet 16 and then let the chips fall where they may and see what our matchups are going to be. But when you look at the final draw for where Tennessee ultimately got put here in Charlotte, Ryan Shumpert, and all things considered with the one seed in their bracket being Purdue, a team they have lost to, granted a long time ago, early in the season, Purdue Boilermakers. Do you like this draw ultimately for Tennessee?
Well, what I think is, well, I'll go to your point a minute ago. The one seed point was a good point of why it hurts for Tennessee to lose. And I think that hurts more when you look at how bad the West region is. Like, man, that would have been big for Tennessee if they could have gotten to one seed in the West. You'd feel a lot better. But what prompted that thought is just that with any draw, there's going to be things that you like and you don't like. I think overall, it's a pretty good draw from Tennessee. I think the first weekend opponents, you know, none of those to me strike it really stick out as bad matchups necessarily. Virginia, I think, is playing about as poorly as any team from a Big Six school in the entire tournament. Now, obviously, they would have to win two games. I think Colorado State probably is actually the best team besides Tennessee, and their little four-team quadrant, really, with what Isaiah Stevens can do and so many options that Colorado State has. And then Texas, obviously, there's the kind of the flashy headline nature of it with it being Rick Barnes' old team. And obviously, Rodney Terry, Texas's head coach, was an assistant for him when he was in Austin. But when you look at this Texas team, nothing about it stands out to me as being a bad matchup. If anything, I think it's kind of a good matchup in the sense that they're a team that plays, relatively speaking, pretty quick, and they have a good offense and a pretty susceptible defense. I think those are the teams we've seen Tennessee generally be pretty good with this season. And then St. Peter's, I mean, there's things that I don't like about the matchup from the standpoint St. Peter's plays an extremely slow pace, and they're a good defensive team and a bad, you know, bad offensive team. And so that could play into it being St. Peter's maybe effectively slowing down the game some. But at the end of the day, this is a team that went 19-13, was the tied for third in the MEAC, the second worst offense in the entire tournament. You know, they're a 15 seed in a year that I know Will Warren, friend of the program, has written about it, that the low seeds this year are not very good in comparison to most years. So at the end of the day, none of that should matter. I don't think it's necessarily the most ideal matchup for Tennessee, but as you said at the Open, it's a 19 point favorites in that game. They should be able to handle business pretty easily.
No, and I mean, you feel good, like you said. I mean, you look at the West and that hurts more when you really do see what Tennessee could have had as a one seed in that side of the bracket. North Carolina, I mean, that side is just one of the worst I've seen in years for what North Carolina just has to get through to make the Final Four once again. But in terms of where Tennessee fell, I mean, you're going to be, I think Tennessee fans should look at Kansas and be pulling hard for Kansas in the top end of their side of the bracket, because I think Tennessee would much rather get Kansas as banged up as they are to make it through and be the team that beats Purdue, or Purdue going down early. Because you want to avoid Purdue at all costs, because I do think they're a matchup nightmare for Tennessee in terms of what ED is going to draw foul-wise and with where Tennessee has struggled this year with their bigs when they get in foul trouble early with really, really physical bigs like A&M and South Carolina the first time, or what Mississippi State's done multiple times. I think that's probably a matchup you want to stay away from, but that's a matchup everybody wants to stay away from when you see how Zach ED is officiated throughout the course of the season. It's also not fun. I don't want to have that experience. I just feel like Tennessee Purdue would not be a pleasant 2 hours of my life. I think both watch the viewers watching at home and Rick Barnes and company would not enjoy that matchup to say the least, because look, it's just gonna be extremely physical. I don't I think it's just weird fit. It's always gonna be weird officiating with Zach Edey, but I also just could see that one being kind of an ugly contest that I don't think Tennessee wants any part of. But I also just think, all things considered, this is a really, really strong bracket for them. Like, I think they should, I don't want to say coast, but I mean, like you said with Texas, like they should get, if they get Texas or UVA, they should be fine. They should really coast to the Sweet 16. And then, I mean, you've beaten South Carolina. I think you feel good about that matchup. Oregon and over their head winning the Pac-12. You feel good there. You feel good about Creighton, I think, even still. And then you're just like, all right, huh?
No, that's the one I disagree
on. You don't feel good about Creighton?
I think Creighton's a really bad matchup for Tennessee.
Why do you think Creighton's a bad matchup?
Well, it, look, Kalkbrenner is not the physical big man that a lot of the guys, Broom, Edie, Dickinson, that have given Tennessee problems, Tolu Smith. So, you know, I feel better about Jonas Adu's ability to hang in on that end of the court, on the defense end of the court. But still, he picks up a couple of fouls. It's a really bad matchup for Tobey Awaka. Then you're almost, I think, going to get forced to JP Estrella playing big-time minutes for you if Adu does get in foul trouble. And then you just reverse it on the other side. This is a Creighton team. Well, I guess on the same side, Creighton plays very, very good offensive team, but they play at a slow pace. These are games that Tennessee struggled in all year, teams that slow it down. And then defensively, Kalkbrenner, I mean, is as good as anybody in the country at defending the rim. I mean, he's just fantastic. And I think this is a game that Tennessee would really have to shoot well to win the game. I mean, certainly possible, but like, I just don't think Tennessee's going to get a ton of the basket in this game. Creighton's an elite defensive rebounding team, one of the best defensive rebounding teams in the country. This is a game that Tennessee, to me, would have to go out and hit 10 threes to win. Or maybe not 10, but at least 8 plus 3s to win. Is that possible? Certainly. But I'm not sure I trust Tennessee to do that in a Sweet 16 game. Unless Dalton Connect goes nuclear, which obviously is always on the table.
I think it's always on the table. Well, what do you think now? Because we'll be taping these after Tennessee gets through. Are you feeling pretty good that Tennessee makes it through the Sweet 16 at the earliest?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like the matchups, but again, it's gonna the round of 32 games is gonna be hard. I don't maybe if it's Virginia, it won't be hard, but if it's Texas, if it's Colorado State, it's gonna be hard. So I think it's certainly a possibility that Tennessee loses that game. But you know, I'm gonna pick Tennessee to win that game no matter who it is, and I think they'll win. And generally speaking, I like the matchups. So yeah, I generally speaking feel pretty good about Tennessee making it to Sweet 16.
What's the most realistic expectation you would toss out for Tennessee fans to enjoy the tournament the most? Do you think that they should still hold national champion aspirations? Should they just hope for the Sweet 16 and just see what the matchup is after that and just be happy there? What's the most reasonable, based on the full body of work with the seeding and everything else, that Tennessee fans should have going into the tournament?
That's a good question. I mean, I think when you're just solely looking at the tournament, I think it's fine to be disappointed if they don't make it to the Elite Eight. Like, I think there's a difference in expectations, or like what you want to happen or what you'd be disappointed with, and also being like, if they lose, I mean, if they play Creighton, I'm going to pick Creighton to win. If they lose to Creighton in Sweet 16, I don't think that's like a travesty, or like how in the world did you lose to Creighton in the Sweet 16? If Oregon stays hot and you lose to Oregon in the Sweet 16, or South Carolina gets there and you lose to South Carolina, that's a completely different, you know, deal. I feel like you'd be very fair to be upset. So yeah, I mean, on the surface, I would say Elite Eight, but how the bracket falls certainly would make me feel different about how inexcusable or frustrating or upsetting losing before that point would be.
Okay, what are you predicting now? So what, it based on this bracket and how it's all unfolded, Ryan Shumpert, have you unveiled your official Tennessee March Madness bracket and where they actually get to?
I mean, I haven't unveiled any official brackets, but from what I'm just clicking through doing my brackets, I haven't losing to Creighton in the Sweet 16.
Okay.
I'm on Tennessee fans should be rooting for somebody other than Creighton to get out of that, to win that four-team tournament this weekend in Omaha, okay. I think.
I don't know. I wouldn't feel, I'm not worried about Creighton. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Creighton would not scare me all that much. I'd be more nervous about Texas for whatever reason, just because of that weirdness and just the anxiety going into it. And I don't know. The Rick Barnes match. I don't know. There's something about the Texas one that, come tournament time, would just be really weird, and I would be a little bit more nervous. I don't want to play Texas in the second game. Do not want any part of that. Not because I don't think Tennessee is significantly better. I just think that's just, I don't know. There's scenarios. My doomsday scenario clock is just ticking with that kind of matchup in round two.
It does play fully into the Tennessee play tight. Everyone will be picking them to win. They'll have extra pressure with it being storyline about Barnes and facing his old team. And certainly Texas hasn't been great this season, but they're still a talented team. They have some guards that are fully capable of going off and going bananas from three and kind of cracking Tennessee's defense from the perimeter in some ways. So Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you said. Like, I think Tennessee is better than Texas. I think it's, like, on paper, a pretty good matchup for Tennessee, but the Tennessee basketball voodoo, and just the standpoint of, and maybe this is where it's good too, that Tennessee struggled and there's less buzz about them going in, is in the Rick Barnes era. I mean, we've just seen it time and time again. Tennessee plays their best in the NCAA tournament when people don't think they're going to win. When there's a lot of pressure, when there's a lot of expectations, they play tight. Doesn't mean they always lose those games, but it seems like they don't play their best when people expect them to win.
I think that's true. But I look, Tennessee fans, go in open-minded, go in feeling good, because this is the best team Barnes has had to this point. You have one of the best players, one of the three best players in the sport this year. That matters come tournament time. I think we're going to see some Dalton connect heroics come tournament time. I think I would expect to bounce back with this being Santi and Triple J's last ride. I think we're going to have a big Santi game. I don't know where it is, but I do think Santi's going to have a big 4-5-3 game early on. I'm willing that into existence here, that Santi breaks
through.
Speaking
into existence.
I really wanted to. I mean, the good vibes are already out a little bit with Santi and Zakai joking about who's guarding Zakai's brother in the St. Peter's game. And Zakai's like, no, you're guarding him. You're I'm not doing it. He's, because I think his brother, is his brother 6'5 or 6'5?
Is Zakai, it's 6'4 or 6'5. I can't. Yeah. I think it's 6'5. Yeah.
Yeah. So Zakai's like, I'm not guarding my brother. Like, so no, it's on you. So I love that. So that the vibes are up. Whatever we got to do to get the vibes up for Santi is what I'm here for.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, it feels like you just need to see one go down, especially one early in the game. Like, that feels like that would go a long way. I mean, sitting there, we sit courtside at the SEC tournament, and like his first, I can't remember, two or three threes, like, they looked right good, and one of them, I think, was in and out. Two of them just barely hit back rim, and then it was like the fourth one was, it was like a complete carbon copy of the Kentucky game, where like the third or fourth one missed terribly, and it was just like he wasn't going to shoot after that.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I mean, let's see. We've seen Santi do it. We've seen, he's just played so much basketball here at UT, played in a lot of tournament games. I don't know. I'm going to go down expecting Santi and Triple J to have a really good tournament and to bounce back for Tennessee. But we shall see. Ryan Shumpert, opening weekend in Tennessee. I wrote about it today. It's one of those things, too, where out of context, you're like, tough series. I think you're a better team than Alabama, especially if you play on a neutral site over the course of a full season with all the context. Like, you're kind of frustrated with how that Alabama series went as a whole. You only get 1 of 3 in the Friday night game, but every single SEC school lost on the road this weekend in the SEC, and it could have gone worse. Like, Georgia goes to Kentucky and gets pulverized in Lexington. They get swept. LSU and Texas A&M both right there with you at the top of the conference, in the top five with you in D1 baseball. They both go 1 for 3 over the weekend. So I think now that you saw everything play out, you would say that, like, yeah, you don't want to start off 1-2 in SEC play, but look, it's going to be, if this weekend taught us anything, I think this is going to be a very, very tight top of the conference this year. And I think outside of maybe Arkansas, you could sell me on just being in their own tier right now. I think this is going to be a very, very competitive, just really hard to win series on the road in this conference this year.
Yeah, I'm really proud of how you've mellowed out since the game ended on Sunday. But no, you're right. And it's a good point about everybody on the road losing this weekend. And it really, my brother said this, so I'm still in his point. But, you know, from our standpoint, like, I don't know, I watch hours of them scrimmaging in the fall, watch a handful of them in preseason, and obviously these 18 essentially, what are essentially preseason games? I know that's probably not true, and you can learn some things about individuals, but you don't really learn anything about the team as a whole, in my opinion, for the most part. And you're quickly reminded that you get into the SEC series, at least against the top end of the conference, when everybody's good, and it kind of comes down to who hits better in clutch moments. Like, that's just, generally speaking, a reminder of who's going to win these series and who's going to win these tight games. And Tennessee, especially on Saturday, did not hit well in clutch moments. They were great in clutch moments on Friday. They ran it up with two outs. And then Sunday was a little bit of both. You know, squanders obviously the big opportunity at the end, but as a whole, not a ton of chances. So you're right. I don't think it's an end of the world situation. You would like to have won the first series. You would especially like to win the first series after winning the first game in the way Drew Beam got you through, you know, the complete game despite the loss on Saturday. But if last year taught us anything, it's that you shouldn't be even close to panicking from what happened the first weekend of SEC play.
No, and I think what's more frustrating is that, like, you were so close in a lot of these games, and you battle back in a lot of them, and, like, some of my takeaways. I mean, one of the things that I'm curious about here, Ryan, is, you know, going into week two, like, your biggest concern,
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm wondering, because, I mean, Tennessee will be home the next 2 weeks, which is huge, as we've also seen here in SEC plays. So you want to be home, and Tennessee obviously has raked at home. I think there's, I don't know if they're still number two nationally in home runs, but they were coming in to this weekend. Yeah, Sunday was their first game that they actually had not hit a home run in all season. So that was a big deal for Alabama. But, like, we talked about in the group chat of, like, that was just nasty stuff by the closer for Alabama with his breaking ball. And
yeah,
I mean, it was just, you saw back-to-back games, really. Like, I forgot what his name was, who was pitching late for Alabama in game two, but he was throwing electric stuff to shut Tennessee down late in that one. So I think it was, look, Alabama's a top 15 team in the country. They're good. They're going to be solid come conference play. And look, I think it's fine, but I do wonder about a couple things. So for me, my biggest question going into week two is, I think Tennessee really needs AJ Russell to go start. Like, he's got to go back to 5 to 6 to 7 innings ASAP, because I think we're seeing where it's like the bullpen. It's still a long season. We'll see who continues to step up. Like, your guy Binky, he looks like a dude that you can rely on the pen. Still like Kirby. We didn't see Xander this weekend. Did we see Marcus Phillips? I don't remember if Marcus, I don't think we saw him.
I think he was up warming up a couple yeah. times, but I don't think we ever saw him.
Stamos was in for a little bit. And he was obviously quickly pulled for Nate Steed. Nate Steed got roughed up a little bit, obviously on Sunday. So I don't know. I think they're still figuring stuff out with the bullpen, and we'll see ultimately who ends up carving out consistent, spots that Tony can rely on and turn to. But for me, I think while you're figuring that out, this is why you really need AJ Russell to be back to AJ Russell ASAP, because you've got a guy in Causey who I'll talk about in a second, but Beam obviously fights back as you knew he would after a tough couple first innings. He pitches a complete game essentially with his 8 innings after the fact to save the bullpen for Sunday. But I think that's my biggest thing, is like, you've got to get AJ Russell ready to go. And I mean, it's just sooner rather than later, because you just don't have the depth right now, or you haven't figured out the bullpen enough to feel comfortable without having your three guys ready to go, right?
100%. Yeah, I mean, you don't have a lot of trust in a lot of those guys in the bullpen at this point. There's talent there, there's guys that you hope, but that by the NCAA tournament you have a lot more faith in. But right now there's just not a ton of those guys, and you know, I think it would go a long way. One, just from the obvious standpoint of picking up more outs. But you feel like if he can get back to, in the way he throws so many pitches, maybe he's only a 5 or 6 inning guy for the most part. But if you can spread Snead out, I think that goes a long way. The way they use Sean Hundley for multiple years, where it's like one inning to close things out on Friday, then two on Sunday. Because he's by far and away the best guy they have in the bullpen right now, and the guy they trust the most in the bullpen right now. So I think that would be big. That would be really important. And you know, I feel pretty solid about a number of the left-handed arms. I don't think any of those guys are going to be able to go out there and give you 3 innings at a time. And to me, the question just becomes, you know, can you find some consistency from a right-handed arm behind Snead? I mean, Combs, I think, is definitely next, the highest on the pecking order. And we saw that. I think he was the first out of the pen, or at least he pitched on Friday night. I can't remember his first out of the pen, or maybe second mitt guy. Maybe he got the final three outs. But even, you know, even he is a guy that's done it more in some big moments. He hasn't been great to this point in the season. It's not like he's been terrible, but not a lot of like super crisp outings from him. Marcus Phillips, really talented. Again, a guy that's a little bit wild. Doesn't feel like the trust factor's really there right now. And I'd say the same thing with most of the JUCO, because Phillips is a JUCO, and then the true freshman pitchers of Derek Schaefer, obviously from the right-handed side, and then Matthew Dallas from the left-handed side. It just doesn't feel like the trust factor's there right now. They haven't been consistent throwing strikes, and they just haven't been peaking entering SEC play. So all three, those are the three guys I'd circle in the bullpen of being really talented guys that if you can find some consistency from, they can get their legs under them. You feel a lot better about the bullpen by the time you're going into the back half SEC play or into the NCAA tournament.
And you feel better experimenting if Russell's healthy, because then you have your three. Yeah. I mean, we've settled in with Causey, who goes the distance. He has 30 Ks in his last three starts. He's ever done almost 10 Ks a night every Friday. I don't know if he'll still be Friday once Russell's ready to go. Who knows? Maybe Tony adjusts a little bit more, but if it's not broken, don't fix it, because AJ Causey has won his last three Friday night starts and has just been electric. I mean, he gives up two homers in the first inning on Friday, and then he just moves on. Like, it's just he's like, all right, that's out. And I've made the comparison to Dolly, where it's just a couple early runs and you're like, could this get away from him early? And it's just not going to. Causey's just going to bounce back, and he's not going to get rattled even in SEC play, because that was something you talked about last week, is like, let's see what Causey looks like against SEC competition. And he rose to the occasion again. Like, he's a dude. Like, AJ Causey has proven he's one of your three starters, and has really settled in as a guy who just gets out and attacks really hard and strikes guys out and just attacks the zone. And I don't know, I just can't be any more positive about just what AJ Causey has been as a Jacksonville State transfer, because I'm very curious, like, what does this Tennessee's rotation look like if Causey doesn't find his footing and just kind of step up for Russell being out? You don't have Chase Burns anymore. You lose Dollander, obviously, to the MLB draft. Like, there was uncertainty. It's not that they don't have it's a talent issue. It's just unproven talent to this point. So this was kind of like, we're still feeling stuff out, and that's what's happening in the bullpen. There's a lot of talent in the bullpen right now. It's just still figuring out roles, figuring out consistency, and like you said, with the lefty righty stuff, like, it's just going to take time. But you feel better about the time that it's going to take to figure that out if you've got your three that you can count on to go 6-7 and you trust, and you have that trust now in Causey. You have obviously always had that trust in Drew, but now you just need AJ to get healthy. And once the other AJ Russell, and once he is good to go back in his 6-7 inning frame, then you're feeling really good about where Tennessee is, and you're okay with the bullpen coming along slower than the rotation.
No doubt. And kind of 2 points on that. One, more specifically on Causey, I think what was so encouraging about it was that he did get roughed up early. And I mean, those were not wall scraping home runs by any means. I mean, those balls were hit a long way, and he was just unfazed by it. And I think maybe where I'd see the big difference from Dolander is it feels like Causey has a more of an ability to just get balls in play, get quick outs. Like, he threw, I wish I had the pitches by innings somewhere we could look at it. Like, he was at like 48 pitches for two innings, and he gets through 6 2/3. Like, he just got into a groove in those middle innings of throwing 8, 10, 11, 12 pitches. Dolander never had that, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. He just got into so many deep counts. But I think that's going to be, or could be at least, so important for this team when you're talking about needing these pitchers to get deep into the games. Actually, 3 points. Second point, I mean, if Causey keeps on pitching like this, I don't think you do take him out of Friday night, because you don't you don't fix what isn't broken. What I almost think could start making some sense is Russell on Saturday, and you move Beam back to Sunday. Not from Beam, not. I saw some people being like, Beam isn't a Saturday guy. Like, he doesn't have the stuff. I don't even understand this take. If you can get outs on Sunday in the SEC, the lineups aren't any different on Sunday than they are on Saturday.
It's just nostalgia. It's just they know him from Sunday. So it's just that's all it is. It's if he had started on Saturdays, like people would just be like, well, obviously he's a Saturday guy. Like it's just because he started on Sunday that it's just weird having him on Saturday. That's all that is.
Yeah. And what I do like about him on Sunday is you're so confident in his consistency and his ability to get you deep in the game. I feel like it allows you to be more aggressive with how you use Snead on Friday and Saturday if things do go wrong. And then if things don't go wrong, you get good starts from those guys, then you only think you're going to need him for an inning or two on Sunday. So that's the part I kind of like about it. And then real macro, third
He's the highest floor guy. Like Beam's the highest floor guy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. And, how incredible has Tennessee's evaluation and recruiting out of the portal been at pitching? Yeah, I mean, they haven't missed on anybody. Yeah. Chase Dolander, Seth Halverson, obviously all three guys this year. I mean, Snead and Causey are two of your best four pitchers. I think Stamos is still one of your better arms in the bullpen. Like, it's been the hit rate there has been really, really impressive. And you're seeing how important it is. I mean, it's been important for the teams in the past, too. I mean, really, each of the last 2 years, two of your four best pitchers have been transfers.
I mean, Dolly's the most impressive for sure. Coming out of Southern and him becoming a top 10 pick. Like that's the development there. And obvious, like it's just Dolly's going to be hard to top in terms of the transfer portal wins. But I do think Causey, you can make the case with how the season going is maybe the most underrated when we look back years from now and what they found with Causey as a Friday night guy at Jacksonville State, because it's a big jump for him too here at Tennessee and to settle in the way he is and a very different kind of pitching motion. He worked with, he talked about this on TPL last week about working with Chizik, who has the same kind of delivery this off season, and that helped him. So I don't know. I just think there's real MLB potential for Causey and just kind of what he is developing at Tennessee. I think this is just a lightning in a bottle thing, and he just has all the confidence in the world. And I think that's a testament to Frank instilling a lot of confidence in these guys and just a really good strategy and really good talent identification by the staff. Once again, like you said, in the portal.
No doubt. And, you know, not to make it seem like it was just obvious that Chase Dolander was going to be a top 10 pick, because obviously that would be inaccurate, but it's like Tennessee saw him first weekend this year. They watched him strike out a bunch of dudes in a really good lineup, and they're like, wow, this guy's really good. And then he goes into the portal, and it's Arkansas and TCU and some of the top programs in the country, and the stuff just jumps out the page. I mean, talking about Causey, obviously the movement's incredible, but not a high-end fastball. This is a guy that had like a 5 or 6 ERA as a Friday night starter at Jacksonville State last year. Like, the numbers were not that good. They were terrible. So for him to all of a sudden turn into, at the bare minimum, what looks like a really good weekend starter and potentially a Friday night starter for you is really, again, just an incredible testament to the scouting and the evaluation on that one.
What was Andrew Lindsay at Charlotte on Friday nights?
Yeah, and a freaking another guy. A good point. Another a dude that was literally coaching 12-year-old baseball, and they went out in the portal and they got this dude, and he became some Friday night starter.
Yeah.
I think he was like a mid-4s ERA guy, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, he was great, and he's going to be one. I mean, he's now an MLB pitcher because of it. I don't know. The pipeline's very strong in this regard. Final thing on baseball, though, I think in terms of the lineup, when we talk about it, we're just trying to figure stuff out. I am worried. Have you heard anything else on Dalton Bargo, and what's the latest on his front?
I haven't heard any more than just what Tony said on the broadcast, that hamstring strain.
That's a big one. What happens there? Because that Tennessee will have to mix and match what they're going to do there. Because, I mean, he can obviously, he's versatile. Like, part of the appeal of Bargo coming in from Missouri was just he could play third. He could catch. He could play first. He could play in the outfield. And he can hit. Like, he's one of Tennessee's best hitters. At any given moment, he could be a pinch hit assassin. He can play in the lineup every weekend. We've talked about like where he actually best fits in the lineup, which days, how you stagger him with different guys. Now it clears things up a little bit in terms of what you do. I think Hunter Ensley is now locked in at this point at the center field spot, and you just go Villeneuve as the DH probably every game, and then because of where Cannon is, because I think Cannon hopefully maybe he turned the corner because he had a nice hit in the top of the ninth on Sunday. So hopefully maybe that is going to help him turn the corner. It's not like he's in the upper twos. It's not like he's really, really struggling behind the plate, but we've seen elite hitting from Cannon Peebles at NC State, and that's just not where he's been to this point, but still early in the season. And I think he's someone that is someone you want to keep an eye on turning it around over the next couple weeks in SEC play. But now I think Inslee's probably locked in there as an everydayer in center. And then you just Villeneuve, like I said, locked in at DH, and we'll see, because hammies are, I mean, they're just hard. I mean, Kavaris Tears, I believe last year he dealt with hamstring issues, right? Wasn't that what he was plagued with and being in and out of the lineup? And I think with that, it's just my dad's had hamstring issues playing soccer over the years. And yet we all have friends who've dealt with hamstring stuff. It's just hard to get back, and it's hard. You have to be really careful with hamstring stuff. It's just kind of a pain. So I don't know. I don't know what it means for Dalton Bargo and where that leaves Tennessee in the lineup category. But it's also, like we talked about, they're second in home runs to this point in the year. The home run power is back from what we saw from 2 years ago. Kavaris has made the leap. He's been fantastic for Tennessee in the four spot. But the 1-2-3 is unbelievable. Like, Billy Amick was in a quote unquote slump on Saturday to Sunday, and he breaks out of it. It's like, if he doesn't hit like four straight times, then it's like, oh, what's going on, Billy Amick? It's like, he can't hit every single time he's up to plate. So it's just a testament to how good Billy Amick's been, that if he does not get on base every three times, you're like, what's happening with Billy? You'll notice it. But Christian Moore has settled in as around 400th leadoff spot. Blake Burke, big start to SEC play, which is something we looked at coming in. He was fantastic over the weekend at Alabama. I think the top four for Tennessee is just so strong, and I think that coming home is going to be good, and I think the lineup should be strong. But Bargo's absence is something to monitor here when we think about the bottom half of Tennessee's lineup, because of how strong that top four, top five is, especially with Villeneuve coming on as a transfer. Another transfer win for Tennessee with Rob Villeneuve as a good find, especially with the power that he's brought to the lineup. But what say you, Ryan Shepherd?
I mean, I think you said a lot of accurate, good stuff. I'll start by talking about Blake Burke, because I've been very much of the, all right, just need to see it in SEC play. And he was so good at the plate this weekend. It's just everything that, and I don't know how much we talked about on here. Jack and I talked about it a lot on the RTI baseball podcast, of he did hit less home runs in pre-conference play this year. And that felt like such an encouraging sign. He just went foul pole to foul pole, was much more consistent as a hitter, struck out less, just had so many doubles, what felt like a much more relaxed approach. And we saw that this weekend. I mean, in 15 plate appearances, just one strikeout, just consistently making hard contact. It felt like he aced that first test, and it feels like he's going to be a guy. And Kavaris Tears is the one guy that didn't really have a very good opening weekend from Tennessee's top four, but it just feels like that 1-4 is so, so good. And especially 1-3 of guys that are probably a 1-3 you could put up against just about anybody's in the conference. I think maybe the thing that I circle more, and I have confidence in this, is just like the middle part of Tennessee's lineup. Because Tears wasn't great this weekend. Robin wasn't great this weekend. Cannon's been shaky, like you said. Like, I think all those guys are going to be good long term. But I think that's more, because my initial thought was kind of the bottom of the lineup. I was like, the bottom of the lineup was worrisome. And I think some of that's just going to be how it is. I mean, Inslee's, I think, better than he's hitting to this point, but like, he doesn't have super top end talent. Dean Curley will continue to see. I think there's just going to be some growing pains there for a guy as he gets going in SEC play. But if you can get Cannon back to what he was in North Carolina State last year, you can get Tears hitting like I think he's going to hit. You get Robin hitting like he looked like. And I to me, it just felt like Tony Isall had a quote on John and Vince's show this morning of being like, some guys just made SEC play out to be too much. And I don't know. I have no idea whether he was talking about Robin. That just kind of felt like a guy that he could have been alluding to from going to junior college and didn't have junior college to SEC and didn't have a great weekend, because his approach has been so good. What he's done at the plate has been very encouraging to thinking he could carry it over into SEC play. So I think they're going to get all those guys fixed out. And I guess the last thing I say is just Dylan Dreiling. For a guy that didn't have massive numbers this weekend, or at least from like a batting average standpoint, he's just so impressive. He delivered in big moments. An
catch
incredible
of the weekend.
Bat, I thought there. Catch of the weekend. I mean, he's the hero of the weekend. If Nate Snead gets the final out of the eighth inning, And if someone comes up big and gets a hit in the ninth inning, because he is a left-handed hitter against that left-handed, it was a left-handed pitcher, mm-hmm. wasn't, or was it a righty mm-hmm. for Alabama?
I think he was left.
Just that breaking ball was, mm-hmm. That breaking ball is just disgusting. And he works a fantastic, some of those two strike pitches that he fouled off was just like, how in the world did he make contact with that? And then he works the walk. It continues to feel like he's going to be really, really good. So I don't know. That was me rambling about a lot of different stuff, but thought being top of the lineup, I think it's going to be elite. Back of the lineup, I don't think you're going to have some growing pains. Really, it was the middle two guys in the lineup that maybe weren't great this weekend that I think if Tennessee gets those guys back to hitting how I think they're going to hit in SEC play, the lineup's going to be really, really good.
We'll end on this, Ryan. Who do you think is the rotation this weekend for Tennessee at home?
I think they'll go the same that it's been. Causey, Beam, Russell. That's my guess. Okay. I definitely think Causey stays in Friday night. Maybe they go Russell on Saturday, but probably depends on how many pitches they think he can throw it. I would still think you maybe see closer to like 75 pitches from him this weekend as opposed to 40. But with him not being fully worked up to like being able to throw 100, I would think they'll keep him on Sunday.
Okay. I like it. Ryan, what can the good folks check out from you and the team over at Rocky Top Insider this week?
Plenty of stuff on the Big Three Sports. We'll have plenty of spring football content. We've had practice observations today. We'll have them again tomorrow. Everything you need to know on Tennessee basketball. I have a kind of a feature-ish story on Zakai Ziegler and kind of his growth as a true pass-first point guard, which to me has been really cool to watch over the last 2 years as he kind of came in as a scorer and now as a true point guard. And then Jack Foster will be holding down the fort covering Tennessee baseball all week. And I'll be back by Sunday to cover the series finale against Ole Miss. So got you covered on all three big sports.
There you go. Brian Shepherd, always a pleasure, and I will talk to you next week.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.